Coming up today, car insurance quotes based on your Facebook posts. 2016 gets the emoji it deserves, and we bid a fond farewell, or maybe not so fond, to Vine. You're listening to episode 292 of the WiredUK podcast, your weekly guide to the best of science, tech, ideas, business and design. I'm your host, James Templeton, and joining me are Matt Burgess.
Hello.
And Amelia Heathman.
Hi.
So, Wired this week is all about Wired events. We've got Wired 2016 and Wired Next Gen. If you're listening to this later than... Well, so Wired 2016 is on Thursday and Friday, and Wired Next Gen is on Saturday. So it's our yearly... get together of all the amazing things from the Wired world. We have main stage speakers at Next Gen. We have interactive workshops for kids aged 12 to 18. It's a really, really fantastic, if slightly exhausting, 3 days. The Wired.co.uk team will be at the back of the room frantically typing to report on all the stories. I'm sure some of the podcast listeners will be there. Do come over and say hello. If not, you can read all about it on Wired.co.uk. We'll go straight into a thing you learned this week, Matt.
I've got a guessing one, and I'm going to make you guess, obviously. So, how many neurons are there in the brain?
Oh, it's a couple of billion, is it?
I'm not telling you yet.
I'm going to say, like 20 billion.
20 billion and one.
Well, by default, James Templeton, you win.
Sorry.
But I need to pick better guessing ones, because whenever it's a number, somebody just goes one higher or one lower.
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, I know it's higher. It's like 40 trillion.
That's too high. So Amelia wins now.
Oh, yes. Damn it.
It's 86 even. 86 billion in the brain. But it actually takes, and this is the really interesting thing that I found out about this and why I was bringing this up, that 69 billion of those neurons are actually involved in the processing of you walking around, knowing where objects are and sensing things. So most of our brain power is used, or not brain power, but most of the neurons in our brain are used for actually the day-to-day basic things, not the really intelligent thoughts that we have and communicate via podcasts.
So just by standing upright, I'm using most of my neurons.
Yeah, you are.
Way to go, brain. So I've spent the last couple of weeks in Japan on holiday. Very good fun. And I noticed that pretty much all trains in Japan have their own distinctive jingle. A quick check of Wikipedia revealed this. In Japan, departing train melodies are arranged to invoke a relief feeling in a train passenger after sitting down and moving with the departing train. Strange. In contrast, arriving train melodies are configured to cause alertness, such as to help travellers shake off sleepiness experienced by morning commuting. It's true that the jingles are very jingly and fun.
So when the train comes into the station, it just like it plays a sound as it like pulls up at the platform, or is it the sound when you're on the train?
There's the sounds on the trains, the sounds on the platforms. Japan is just a very musical, whimsical place. And as a massive train geek, it was fun to find that they have effectively train theme songs.
Do they have different songs for different lines, or is it the same?
It's different all over the place.
Oh,
can you sing one?
No, but I'm sure they're on YouTube somewhere. One of my travelling companions did actually record a couple. But yeah, that's useless right now. Amelia, what did you learn this week?
I learnt that the Republic of Kiribati, an island nation in the Central Pacific Ocean, is the only country in the world in all four hemispheres. This nation is consisted of 32 aloes, which is a ring-shaped coral reef that often encircles a lagoon, and one solitary island as well called Banaba. And all these elements extend into the eastern, western, northern, and southern hemispheres.
Good fact.
That's a good pub quiz question.
I can add you one more fact. It's actually pronounced Kiribati.
Oh, well, there we go. Pronounced it wrong.
Our first story this week is about what a car insurance company has tried to do with Facebook data, and it's quite unusual.
It is. So this company is called Admiral, and they provide car insurance. I think they provide a few different other types of insurance as well. But in this case, their policy on their new product they are announcing, or software they're announcing overnight last night, has actually come under a lot of scrutiny from Facebook and a lot of other people, because they were going to look at people's Facebook profiles and the data that they posted on there and actually decrease people's car insurance quotes and offers depending on the sort of things that were posted onto Facebook.
So you could get a discount by being a good Facebook user, in essence. And we should just say we're recording this on Wednesday. We normally record the podcast on Thursday, Friday. So this is a story that's kind of developing as we're recording the podcast. So things might change a little bit. But this is where the story's at now. It's been announced. There was a lot of fanfare around it from Admiral. They were obviously very proud of this clever technology that they developed. Then they hit a problem.
Yeah, they did, and Facebook was the problem. But to give you a little bit more background around what was being announced and what was actually planned by Admiral, was they said that their algorithms could scan recent information posted to Facebook of a user who had actually granted them permission to go and look at this, and they would look at data from the last 6 months for personality signs, and these would basically be whether somebody's Facebook statuses were conscientious and organized. So apparently, according to Admiral, this includes looking for concrete sentences, lists, arranging to meet people at specific times and places. So apparently, and this is in their sort of their logic behind this, if I said to you, James, on Facebook, in a Facebook status, do you want to go to the pub at 7 p.m, this would show that I am somebody who is organized, somebody who is basically going to be potentially a better driver.
But you are going to the pub, well, which would make you a worse driver.
That would, but I would not obviously be drinking and driving, and I would be drinking responsibly.
Absolutely. But this, the technology will, it doesn't sound clever, it sounds slightly terrifying, and it turns out that you're not actually allowed to do this.
No, it doesn't. And this policy, just for a bit more information, or this procedure was aimed at young people around 17 to 21 who are quite statistically known to be people who are involved in more crashes and actually die more, a bit more on the road. So there was obviously some sort of thinking behind this and aiming it at young people and social media users and Facebook users. But Facebook actually said that this is something that they can't do. So Facebook has a number of policies, from everything to hate speech, sexism, everything that goes on online, and basically its own ethical code of conduct, which in some cases may be right or wrong and is up for argument and dispute. But it has this set of policies and guidelines about acceptable use of the service by individuals and by advertisers and brands and everybody. So this actual thing from Admiral was against part of their policy, or part of Facebook's policies. So under section 3.15, if you want to go and read it, of Facebook's platform policy, Facebook says that people and companies in particular shouldn't use data obtained from Facebook to make decisions about eligibility of people for certain schemes of certain different access. So
The kicker here is the actual wording of it is including whether to approve or reject an application or how much interest to charge on a loan, which is exactly what Admiral was doing.
Exactly. And they, Facebook has basically said, this doesn't, what you're planning to do doesn't comply with our policy guidelines, so you can't do this. And Facebook, and Admiral has actually had to go back and say, we're not going to do this now. So
despite the fact that in their original announcement, they said, this is what we're going to do because it's really clever and it will mean that you can save money.
Yeah, so they've actually backtracked on it already because they can't do it, basically. And what the thing for me on this whole situation is, this is obviously something that Admiral has been planning for quite a while. You don't just launch this or create something without just overnight. And how have they just not spoke to Facebook about this? If you were going to do something using somebody else's platform and technology, the first thought I would have would be, let's
go and actually do it.
Yeah, well, they didn't even have to ask. They could have just read the policies. Which, I don't know, that just seems a little bit like they should have been a bit more, should have been a bit more foresight on this.
It's a clever idea, as I said before, also slightly terrifying. You have these little devices that you can use in cars already that track how you drive and give you discounts on your insurance based on your behaviour behind the wheel. And I guess this is trying to do that preemptively. And what you normally have is this kind of thing will launch a load of privacy experts, commentators will throw their arms up in the air and try and create enough pressure to get it shut down. But in this instance, it was actually Facebook's privacy protections for its users that shut it down before it could even get started.
Yeah, and that was actually really refreshing for an actually thing from Facebook to be doing and saying, it shows that they're looking at this. And there obviously was some pressure from privacy groups, etc., saying this shouldn't be happening. And there's many, many, many valid reasons why this shouldn't be happening. And Facebook obviously agrees and said that, Admiral, not this time. Sinking ship, Admiral.
Haha, very good. But the flip side of it, of course, is that, well, Facebook's allowed to use your data in all manner of ways. So there's one set of rules for Facebook, and there's another set of rules for people that want to use its platform. So Facebook has its own privacy problems. If you're not paying for something, you are the product. Whereas in this case, a company was trying to make money, effectively, from that Facebook data.
I guess also, the thing is with this, I assume you would have to give Admiral the permission in order to access that data. So obviously the user is making that active decision then. It's not like Admiral have just picked up your Facebook profile and are choosing it from there. So I guess it did give the user some control in that sense, whereas obviously Facebook doesn't allow the user control the data that it then sells on to advertisers, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, there are controls, but they're pretty well hidden for sure. And there's another point to that as well. I remember when people played games more on Facebook, when that was a big deal, and you had all these people playing kind of Candy Crush ripoffs, and the amount of data that some of these applications would ask for, and it was something that Facebook did clamp down on, it was ridiculous. And of course, people just click, yeah, I want to play Candy Crush. And I guess in this instance, if you're told in very nice marketing, you could get a 15% discount on your car insurance quote if you're a responsible human being. Click here to find out how much you could save. And you can see the kind of marketing and advertising that they build around it. And you're like, yeah, big green button telling me I can save money. And you save money. But what do you give up as a result of that? And what's it even based on? I mean, most of the stuff that I post on Facebook is tedious hot takes on news stories and pictures of holidays. I'm not really sure what Admiral would get from that.
No, I don't know. It's really confusing to understand what they would be getting from the data, and how it'd be really fascinating, to be honest, to see how they planned their systems to look at this, because the descriptions they've given about sort of times and places and Facebook likes on pages don't really indicate to me that somebody would be a safer driver or anything like that. So taking away all the privacy issues and anything like that, it'd be really interesting to find out what the actual metrics were behind it and how this would work, because everybody uses Facebook in a different way. And that, I guess, that is the point of the privacy arguments behind this, that not there isn't a uniform way to categorize people in these different groups. And you could obviously look at biases and prejudices in this sort of data, but it's just like, how would this work?
Well, we may never find out. The latest, I believe, before we started recording the podcast was Admiral had taken to Twitter to say, well, this was never what we planned to do. We're not going to do it. But then there's the very obvious problem of that's a completely different line to what they actually announced. So the story's up on wired.co.uk. You can go and find out lots more about it. And of course, we'll be keeping that updated if there are any developments. Our second story this week is somewhat less earnest, but arguably way more important. Amelia, you have some terribly, terribly interesting emoji news.
Oh, it's very exciting. It was announced yesterday that lots of new emoji are coming in the next iOS update. So we're going from iOS 10.1 to 10.2, and we get lots of great little emoji pictures alongside
How
that.
How many new emoji do we get?
We get a total of 72.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a big one this time. So it's kind of made up of different things. As per usual with emoji, we have lots of new food pictures. We've got the avocado has finally arrived on iOS.
Thank God.
I know. We all needed that. We have bacon. We have champagne glasses clinking.
There's a potato as well, I think.
Yeah, and a sliced kiwi.
Salad bowl. I think that's one.
Yeah, I think there's one of those. Yep. And one that I can't tell if it's pancakes or eggs, but either way, I'm happy for that. These, like, all the brunch things have definitely been involved in this update.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which is important.
Definitely. And as part of the Unicode update, which is the cross-platform system that emoji is based on, an effort has actually been made to include a wider range of professional characters in all genders. So you can send yourself in emoji form as an astronaut, pilot, farmer, firefighter, or a judge, regardless of the gender. So I'm pretty sure we'll be using the astronaut one a lot in the Wired office.
But you've left out one very, very important detail, and we speculate that this may go on to become 2016's defining emoji.
Oh yes, this is my brand. This is my favorite. The facepalm is coming to emoji. Facepalm seems to be a really big word of 2016. Last week on the Great British Bake Off, one of the contestants just used it in a sentence, just straight up, for a mistake that he made. And that's definitely a symbolism of British culture. So that was really exciting. So that could replace the crying laughing face as one of the most used emojis. I guess we'll have to wait and see what
I can't wait to find out.
Do you have a most favorite emoji, James Emerson?
I don't.
Do you use emoji? Do you know what emoji are?
Wow, so many questions. I don't really emoji. I can see that it's cool. I'm not going to give you a long-winded answer. I'm too curmudgeon-y, I think. You're actually opening your phone now.
I'm going to check what my most used emoji.
Oh, can you actually do that?
Yeah, they come up as like the frequently used.
Okay, go on.
Okay, there.
You've got to say now.
So it's the kissing face, heart eyes, heart. So me and my girlfriend use emoji quite a lot.
You're very lovely on emoji, Matt Burgess.
Yeah, so I actually already regret opening my phone to check that.
An excellent shade of magenta. All right, so face palm for you, for sure. Why do we care about emoji? Why is it so important, Amelia?
Obviously, when we write a story about emoji, we get all the web clicks. But emoji is also a really important method of communication pre-iOS and pre-smartphones. We had an article in the November issue of Wired, and you can read this online, about how humans have been using symbols to communicate and convey emotion, similar to emoji, since the Stone Age. Archaeologists and scientists studied cave art in Paleolithic Europe. You know, you might remember seeing pictures of the drawings of black horses, rhino and bison in caves in Spain and France and things like that. And alongside these drawings, there were lots of little dots and lines and circles. These didn't receive as much attention because obviously they weren't as detailed. But when it was actually found that these symbols are found in lots of different caves across Europe, which is quite cool, actually, that they travelled. They assume this could have been through like intermarriage or trading. A lot of trading was going on. And the repetition of these patterns show us that there actually was a kind of typology in place at the time.
This is some very clever scientific researchers.
Yeah, there's much more important than the way I've just read it.
Well, the word that they're looking for is symbol, but they've used the word emoji to get some really good press coverage for some really interesting research. I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? You can communicate anything, and again, not to hark back, I went to Japan, and a lot of the time, the only way that you can tell what something is there'll be a symbol.
Yeah.
Right? The only way you can tell what a toilet is in a lot of places, is there'll be a picture of a toilet and hopefully a picture of a man or a woman next to it, so you know which one you're meant to go in, right? So these symbols and emoji, if you want to call them that, they're a huge part of how we communicate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's really powerful about them. We as a society agree upon certain meanings for symbols, so we know what a toilet looks like and we know where to go find a toilet in any country across the world. And
or if you're Matt Burgess, what a heart looks like.
And we instantly know how to interpret them without even thinking about it. So we can see the historical importance of faces like emoji and things, and the symbols that preceded our little 2D cartoon faces.
Yeah, and the more representative they can get of genders and races and the actual world, the better, which is why it's important that there's an organization like Unicode looking after all of it.
There's also a emoji movie coming out this year, next year.
Yes, James Corden's going to be starring in it. You can read all about it on wired.co.uk.
I think that's all we need to say, really.
Pretty much. Our third story this week is about the NHS. Operations and appointments have been disrupted for a third day at an NHS trust hit by a virus over the weekend. But not that kind of virus, obviously, a computer virus.
Oh, dear.
I mean, it's true, right? It's the wrong kind of virus for a hospital. So the Northern Lincolnshire and Goole NHS Foundation Trust confirmed that nearly all planned operations, outpatient appointments and diagnostic procedures had been cancelled for Wednesday, November 2nd, the day that we're recording this podcast. And they were also pretty much all cancelled for Monday and Tuesday as well.
So this virus, which, as you've explained, is a computer virus, how is the hospital treating it?
In its words, it is isolating and destroying a computer virus, which was detected on the 30th of October. What's not clear is what kind of virus it is, what nature of attack, how sophisticated, what vector it used, where the weakness was in the organisation. But what we do know is that this NHS trust runs three hospitals, one in Grimsby, one in Scunthorpe and one in Goole, which are all up kind of near Hull, in the north of Lincolnshire. And it's taken all of their IT systems offline. So doctors are using pen and paper. They're having to send patients elsewhere. And basically, it's brought three hospitals to a complete standstill.
And this obviously is as serious as it sounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big deal. The problem with, and I was kind of toing and froing whether to bring this onto the podcast or not, is we don't really know an awful lot about it. But what we can say is that this is causing really, really widespread disruptions. So in a statement posted on its website, the Trust warned that all patients over the age of 18 should presume that their appointments have been cancelled. Major trauma cases and high-risk women in labour are being diverted to neighbouring hospitals. And while the accident emergency service at the hospitals affected remains opened, the trust confirmed, they advise that people try and go elsewhere to neighbouring trusts, which admittedly aren't very far away, but this is a really, really big deal.
It really is. Like, in recent weeks, we've seen the internet being taken down by internet-connected products, for a vast majority of the web and users at certain points. And this sort of just attack and cyber attacks are very just growing. And yeah. I think they should be taken very seriously. So I would like to see after this, when this virus or whatever this is caused is completed in these hospitals, an actual report about this, like a properly produced report from their IT systems and what caused this and can it be stopped?
Yeah, and I'm sure there will be a very, very thorough investigation. So the affected hospitals share 4 clinical IT systems, all of which have been forced to almost completely shut down across the 3 hospitals. The trust has not disclosed any details about the attack, other than confirming a, quote, virus had, quote, infected its electronic systems, which is a very roundabout way of saying that something bad happened. And it said that it doesn't know when the systems will be restored, but that appointments that have been cancelled will be rescheduled as soon as possible. And it's a very real world manifestation of quite often security problems. Like, well, companies might lose money, things might get a bit disrupted at, I don't know, Ashley Madison, for example, was another great example of real world effects. People potentially, their lives were ruined, and in this case, people are waiting for operations. It might mean that people get sick or that people don't get the kind of care that they need, or it's certainly going to put strain on the hospitals affected.
How often does this happen? Do we know about how often this does happen in the NHS?
Yeah, so it almost feels a bit like an accident waiting to happen. So almost half, 47% of NHS trusts. So for people not in the UK, NHS trusts are smaller parts of the NHS, to kind of explain this badly, that run local areas of hospitals. So in this case, it's 3 hospitals that are run by this one trust. So almost half, 47% of NHS trusts have been subjected to a ransomware attack in the past year, according to figures from a recent Freedom of Information request. It isn't clear whether this was a ransomware attack or not, but if almost half of hospitals are being attacked by just that one very specific kind of vector, then it's pretty easy to guess that, I mean, that they're a big target.
Yeah. I remember when we had our wide security event a couple of weeks ago, and we had the head of GCHQ's new arm, the new cybersecurity arm, and he was saying that they'll want to be using their data to help protect the NHS and help stop attacks like this. So, you know, it sounds like this is a big job for them, and they should get right on it.
Yeah, and the NHS has a fairly lousy reputation when it comes to IT and computer infrastructure as it is, and does rely still on quite a lot of quite outdated systems despite efforts to update. We're going to be keeping a very, very close eye on this one. It isn't yet clear when the hospitals will be brought back online and what kind of attack this was. So we'll be updating, keep an eye on why.co.uk and possibly on the podcast next week. All right, we've got a short ad break coming up, but after that, we'll be discussing the sad demise of Vine.
This year, Wired launched the Wired Audi Innovation Awards to celebrate the people achieving extraordinary things, from AI to design and science to social innovation. The nominees have been decided, and the awards will be handed out at a ceremony on November 9th. To find out more, visit wired.co.uk. Search for the hashtag Wired Audi Awards and pick up the January issue of the magazine, where we'll be showcasing the work of the winners.
Welcome back. Vine is no more. I never used it. I don't really care about it, but I'm informed that it was a pretty big deal and, well, maybe not a big enough deal.
No. Well, James, you were wrong. It was a big deal.
Was it your life?
It was not my life, but it was a lot of people's lives. For people that don't know what Vine is, because I'm sure there are some people listening who may maybe not come across it or only heard reports of it being closed down or set to be closed down last week. It was a social media app that was bought by Twitter in 2012, actually before it launched. So Twitter saw it in its sort of pre-launch phase and said, we're going to have this, we really like it. And it was basically a really short video format. So people could upload 6-second videos, which doesn't sound like a lot, but they were made a bit more interactive by repeating, just like a GIF basically, and you could literally upload a 6-second video and it would go and play again and again and again and keep looping, and some of the biggest ones had like billions of loops by the end of Vine is still going, but some of the biggest Vine clips that were uploaded were billions of views. And it was really like a creative platform. 6 seconds doesn't sound a lot, but there are a lot of celebrities that actually came out from this. I'm not going to name them because we all know who they are.
Right, yeah.
And we're not going to recall them all now. But there were actually a lot of celebrities that came through this that have progressed on to being big social media stars across different platforms just for creating like really funny and just creative clips with 6 seconds. So it would literally be something that is very, very much staged in some cases, but look real. And then there are also some that were very real, like going up to somebody in the street and asking for a reaction about something. So there were just a lot of different types of vines, and they just became quite ubiquitous across quite a few different social media platforms because you could embed them in different places and use them on any sort of websites, and an easy way to show a bit of video that isn't too data intensive.
So it's all about the lols.
Pretty much. There was actually a meme that was doing it for the Vine. So people would actually... Yeah. Vine was a lot bigger in the US than it was in the UK. But there was a meme that was created and a song around it where people would actually do specific stunts for the Vine.
Can you sing the song?
I can't sing the song.
I think it's important to point out that 6 seconds is a bit longer than most people think. If I was to say stop talking for 6 seconds... That's quite a long time.
That was quite uncomfortable. That was, as
well. Yeah, it really was a bit awkward.
We're just sort of staring at each other. So give me some stats. Give me some Vine stats.
Which sort of stats do you want, James Thompson?
I want to know how many users it had.
It had 200 million active monthly users around August 2015, which is only 3 years after its launch. Just to give a bit more background around why it's no more, because it was owned by Twitter, and Twitter hasn't been doing very well recently. In its recent financial statements, it said that Twitter itself hadn't really put on any more users. It had grown 3% year on year, which isn't really anything, and it was actually going to make 9% of its workforce redundant.
So 300 people have lost their jobs. Vine is being, as Twitter would put it, sunsetted.
Yeah, so
which means killed.
Gradually closed down, but shut down altogether.
Yeah, the sun will never rise again.
No, not in 6 seconds either.
Nice. You've got a number here on our notes about the number of loops on Vine in 10 months. That's a very big number.
It is.
347,186,768,222 loops in 10 months.
Yeah, and that was in one of its early stages. I think during 10 months of its second year. So that was like 2013, around that 2014. So not very long, and that is a lot of loops of people actively watching 6 second videos. I don't know what that actually equates to in time, but that is probably quite a lot.
Some quick maths reveals that it's 6 times that number. All right, so there's a bit of a trend here of fairly successful apps and services that can't quite get there. They can't quite make that leap like WhatsApp did. Even when they're bought by fairly successful social networks such as Twitter, they don't quite make it. I mean, you've got so many of the bleeding things. So Instagram, Snapchat, Vine, Periscope, Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, Line, Kick, Peach, Elo, Bebo, Orkut, MySpace, Friends Reunited, Poke, Peach. Did I say Peach already? Yeah, it's a staggering list, and that's not even scratching the surface. It's incredibly competitive out there, and lots of them, even when they get quite big, fall by the wayside.
They do, and... both of you two, what are the big... Do you use any obscure facial messengers?
Social.
That's what
yeah.
I mean.
No. I think, like a lot of people, I signed up to Elo and then ditched it.
All about Facebook and Twitter in here?
Yeah, Instagram, occasionally Snapchat.
Well, when we were asking about this earlier, who was it that mentioned Peach?
That was me.
That was fairly obscure.
It was, but I think we reported on it a couple of times last year, which was a bit of a hybrid between two or three different apps, and it was talked about a lot and then just died by the way. Well, it's still going, but I've never heard anybody mention Peach.
According to the App Store, it hasn't been updated since July, which is a really long time for an app to not be updated.
Yeah, and I think the most recent comment is, have the Peach staff forgotten about it, which probably suggests that they have. So let's take a look back. Bebo... which is a social networking site that quite a lot of people in the UK and Ireland might remember, launched in 2005. It still kind of exists today, but as a avatar hashtag messaging app, I have no idea what that is. But Bebo was huge.
I remember Bebo being really big in the kind of pre-MySpace. Well, for my age generation, a bit before we came to MySpace, people had Bebo.
Which brings us seamlessly on to MySpace, founded in 2003. It's still going, albeit it's now owned in part by Justin Timberlake. And no one really uses it.
But MySpace was so big, like so many bands and artists and things like that launched themselves off the back of MySpace for having such a huge following. And it definitely was preceded Facebook. But I think the problem with MySpace as well, it was just way too complicated.
Yeah, and people could design their own pages and they look like nightmarish hellholes.
Exactly.
GIFs and flashy things and autoplay music. Another British one launched in 2000, Friends Reunited. So this is probably the oldest of the bunch. It was shut down, remarkably, in February 2016.
That really surprises me. I would have thought it would Facebook just almost completely replace it in a way.
Yeah, no. Well, I think it had. No one was really using it, and then someone decided to hit the kill switch. Unfortunately, ITV spent £120 million on it in 2005, thinking it was going to be the next big thing. 1 year after that, Facebook launched, I think. Mm. Whoops.
Ooh. Yeah.
Slightly unfortunate. Ello is the only network designed for creators by creators and not used by many people.
Don't really know what it does.
No, it was the privacy-focused social network, and that kind of fell by the wayside. And it's not surprising that Vine's gone. Is there something that's going to be filling the void left by it?
I guess Instagram did. They started when Instagram started video. You could only do those for a certain amount of time. I think it was 10 seconds. But since then, that's even been updated now, and you can do them for a lot longer. They have Boomerang. Instagram obviously has the Boomerang thing.
Right.
So which it does that kind of autoplay, I guess, that Vine did. And
I'm going to just GIFs. It's just GIFs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Giphy is a huge company with a really remarkably large valuation for something that is just GIFs and is doing very well.
Yeah. And I think because Giphy seems to be more universal. I mean, if you use Slack, Giphy is obviously integrated into that. GIFs are always used across Twitter and Facebook and things like that in a way that, yeah, Vine, thinking back at it now, Vine just never was. So...
yeah, I think Vine's demise was inevitable, really, with the launch of so many other video platforms and so many other social networks moving into video themselves. I think it was just a case that it was probably going to happen, but it's something that had a really dedicated bunch of users and followers and was just a really quite a versatile platform for doing many different things.
So is my Facebook feed now going to become home to more people doing 6 second for the lols, not Vine, but like Vine videos?
I guess now Facebook is more full of Facebook Live, and obviously Twitter has Periscope as well. So I think definitely this is more of the live streaming aspect that people care about a bit more on social media.
Yeah. So we'll leave the loops to the GIFs.
Yeah, leave them to them, unless somebody else comes and replaces Vine, or the Vine creators recreate Vine in a different format or something like that. But I guess we have to wait and see.
I'm sure Matt Burgess will be really excited.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can't end this podcast without asking you a question. In the notes, Matt, you've put anecdote about porn. Go ahead.
So on the night that Vine was closing down, the Vine co-founders, there was two out of the three of them, took to their new social media app, which I think was called Hype, but I've actually deleted it off my phone now, so it didn't impress me that much. But they were talking about their early days of Vine on this app, and they seemed really sort of down and a bit depressed, as you would, because they said it was a bit of a surprise to them that they were going to be closing. And they explained how a human error in the first 2 or 3 weeks of Vine ended up putting a very explicit clip on the top of everybody's Vine feed. So just when it was growing, when it was getting loads of users, they put this video as an editor's pick. And
they didn't mean to.
No, they didn't mean to. But basically, because they were so early on and just been bought by Twitter and were just launching, they hadn't actually fully built the app and the moderation tools properly. And were probably a bit overwhelmed, I would imagine. But the co-founders said that they literally created a button on their version of the app, or two buttons, one for deleting something, one for making it an editor's pick. And you can see where this is going. Mm. One morning, one of the co-founders got up and was flicking through all the Vines to remove some of the porn ones on there, because he said there was a lot of porn being put on there when it wasn't moderated properly. And I think the quote he actually said on this video was, there was so much porn on Vine at that time, it was just dick, 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 dick. I would go through it and I would just be swimming in them.
Which is a horrible, horrible image. The video was called Dildo Play. And it kind of, it's a nice little, that's what the internet is. Really, once you scratch below the surface, it's just a load of smut.
Yeah, and co-founders of companies trying to moderate their way through it and basically create a business around something and then just grow up from nothing at all. And then it comes back to porn.
Yep. Well, there we go. And on that note, we will end the podcast. As I said, if you're listening to this on early Thursday or even Friday. Check out all of the stuff from Wired 2016 and Wired Next Generation on wired.co.uk. And we will be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.